It's the Football League podcast, driving to Swindon's training ground with some sage. Coming up, the Championship and most of League One returns. Will there be more home comforts at Home Park? Can Gareth Ainsworth pull off a Salop-shaped shock? And who put in the performance of the season in our predictions? Me. That's who. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. All right, we're back with another show. Really pleased to have you along for the ride, listener. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I am joined by Adrian Clark. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, I'm all good. All good. A very busy morning, but we're here. So let's do it.
Sam Parkin is with us as well. Now then, Sam, you're in the club's Hall of Fame after your brilliant 3-year spell as a Swindon man. Just how haunted is the training ground?
Yes, it's good.
Definitely a different training ground. Sorry. Can't really give you a lot here. I think I've been there, if it's the one in Carn. Yeah, it's not the most salubrious. And there's been long time hope that there was going to be a new training ground, to no avail. So hopefully that motor's on now, given what Ollie's been saying the last few weeks. I did start his press conference this morning, and he says this is the most excited he's ever been for a game.
He's never said that before, has he?
Morecambe at home this weekend. So my pals down there in the media are certainly getting value for the money at the moment. But I think some of the reporting was a bit OTT, because they've only lost one game in five since he's been there. Obviously got through in the Cups and won in the Football League trophy. And, got a point at Aki the other day. So it's gone okay thus far. But if he wants to get his wife down the training ground to alleviate any ghouls, get on with it.
How do you do that then? What's the protocol?
Well, in case anybody missed this, he said that there were some strange things happening at the training ground after Ollie Clark ruptured a tendon in his ankle. He's going to get his wife to cleanse the area with sage. Apparently where the training ground is close to an ancient burial site. He said, I'm absolutely devastated, so I'm going to try and cleanse the training ground area because people are telling me it's haunted. There's a graveyard somewhere near. Honestly, I'm not joking.
But I've heard some deflection tactics in my time. Players, managers making all sorts of excuses for being crap. But come on, boys, have you ever heard anything more?
Yeah, but that's
wacky?
Just Ollie having a chat, though, isn't it? He's probably just gone off on one for a giggle. I don't think I've heard of playing fields, training pitches being haunted. I've heard of buildings being haunted. If you'd have gone down that route, but the goal mouth of the first team pitch. Incredible scenes.
Well, let's hope that there's more goals and less ghouls for Swindon in the near future. Before we get into our weekend previews, let me remind you that we have partnered up with Quinbet for another season. And to celebrate that, they've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers that sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. There, if you'd like to help us, you can leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. That's what S. Mokey did earlier this month. Said, great panelists, great chat. The depth of knowledge about so many teams is really impressive. Recommended. Thank you very much. Then goes on to say, but why is the title music and ident music so different? Jolts me every time. It is because I am not a very good producer and I don't have an ear for musicality. But I do have two pals who know an awful lot about the Football League, and that gets me out of trouble. We're going to dive in to some weekend previews next. Lions versus Black Cats probably appear on the next episode of Asia with David Attenborough. It will definitely happen in the Championship this weekend. Millwall against Sunderland. Intriguing, isn't it? We gave Millwall their props last weekend. Sunderland been getting them all season. So who's going to come out on top when the pair meet? Sam, you're looking at the Millwall angle on this one for us as a former Lions loanee. And beaten in the last seven games and pretty good at home too. This is a big test for them, and whether that recent run is something that can be sustained.
Yeah, I genuinely think this is probably a 50-50 match when you consider how good Millwall have been, especially in these big matches at home. And the problem for Sunderland, which I'm sure Clarky will earmark in a moment, is that they've got selection issues, which Millwall all of a sudden don't. In essence, if you look and think Coburn and Bradshaw both played at Stoke, they're probably the two most obvious omissions over the last month or two. The midfield is fascinating, probably a really important area in this game, because he's got George Saville to come back in potentially. Wintle and Denoor played at Stoke. He's got Honeyman as well, whether he plays in the midfield or as a 10. So there's great options in the midfield and in attack for Neil Harris. Two very good defences, I think. That's clear as day. I think Millwall maybe have kind of gone back to what they've been known for, I suppose, over the years, which is very regimented in defence. The organisation is incredible. Two centre-halves at the top of their game right now. You could say a lot of this about Sunderland's rear guard as well. So I don't see there being many goals. See that midfield being a really fascinating area. An essay potentially up against Sirkin. I think, two of the best players in the division so far this season. If essay can have a good day, then Millwall can do, again, what they've done to Burnley and Leeds in recent weeks. But, yeah, I think very, very difficult to call. If I was siding one way or the other, I'd probably lean on another home win. And that's probably just down to, you know, the absences all of a sudden. Mundell, I think, Roberts potentially, Bellingham. I think there's doubts about a number of the Sunderland lads for one reason or another. And Millwall are the best side over the last six games. So, huge game.
Yeah, Sunderland, maybe because of these injuries, Clarkey, but maybe just levelling off a little bit. They're top on goal difference, but they've drawn their last three and failed to score in two of those. I guess we were always expecting some sort of regression, or am I jumping the gun saying that that's already happening?
No, I think we were expecting that. I mean, they did play with 10 men at QPR in that goalless draw for a lot of that game. So that's sort of a circumstance that worked against them. They were really annoyed at themselves for letting Coventry back into it last time out of the stadium. Like, that was really frustrating for them. It's three suspensions, actually. Joe Bellingham still suspended. Patrick Roberts and Trey Hume are both out suspended as well. And there are doubts in terms of injuries over Mundell and Alan Brown. So look, without Mundell and Roberts, you got the chief kind of ball carriers there, the guys that tend to make things happen. They really energise it. It's a big responsibility on Sirkin to get forward down that left, maybe. And of course, he's up against Essa, who's a really good player going the other way. So how bold will he be in the game? So that's an interesting one to keep your eye on in that duel. Of course, what's going to happen, I think, with the right back missing, Trey Hume, who's been brilliant, by the way, is that probably 09 goes to right back. Ballard comes in at centre half. Now, actually, Ballard's a bigger lad than 09, so maybe handling that aerial threat of Millwall might be better with Dan Ballard. But of course, you are disrupting the back four that's been really, really settled. But they've got no choice. What I would worry about for Sunderland is that whole right side has been taken away, with Hume and Roberts both been brilliant down that side. That they're the top chance creators in open play for Sunderland. Both got 16. Mundell and Bellingham are next on 15. They both might be missing. Well, Bellingham definitely is. And then you got Chris Rigg. So there's a lot on Rigg potentially in this game to make things happen. So yeah, look, I kind of agree with Sam. I think with all the disruptions to Sunderland, this is an opportunity for Millwall to win. On the flip side, if Sunderland can go there depleted, you know, mix and match team and get a win, wow, what a statement that would be, and what a piece of coaching that might be from Regis Labrisse. So yeah, so this is a really, really interesting game. I don't think it'll be high scoring, but on paper it's one of the games of the weekend.
I think it's going to be 1-1 because the last three meetings between them at the Den have all been, so let's make it four in a row. Right then, elsewhere in the Championship, we should probably rename Plymouth's ground Home Parking. The amount of times that Sam's been there.
Anything to get away from the kids, eh? You know, have a little break. Yeah.
You're going to be there Friday night, Sam. It's Watford's opposition for Plymouth Argyle. And with the notable exception of that thumping win at Sheffield Wednesday, which I'm sure Adrian will touch on, for Watford, they've been rubbish away. For Plymouth, all their good stuff's been done in front of their own supporters. So is this a home banker in your eyes? Is this one that the Rooney documentary / Plymouth documentary is going to feature heavily on?
I think, again, you'd have to side slightly with the home side, given... Yeah, the fact of the matter is that Argyle, again, are brilliant at home, and Watford are really toiling away. There's a degree of mayhem about Watford games, I think, in terms of goals and opportunities in those away games. So hopefully I'm in for plenty of goal mouth action. A little bit disrupted Argyle. In terms of the back four, there's been no Gibson and no Edwards, who's going to be out for a period. So Sorinola and Plaguezuelo have come in and done pretty well, actually. In obviously the last couple of games, there was the 1-0 win over Pompey, their first clean sheet of the season, and obviously that draw at Derby recently. I think it's the creativity, it's the quality of chance that they're probably not making at the moment, which is an issue. Randall with the free kick at Derby the other day, I don't think, you know, having watched the extended highlights, there was too much else to shout about one kind of speculative Callum Wright effort. So they're not creating a great deal. And I think a big talking point down there at the moment is just the form, probably the body language as well, of Morgan Whittaker, who I think I've said previously has to be in the team because he's capable of coming up with those moments, as he has done last minute a few times at Home Park to salvage points. But his performance levels aren't anywhere near of what they were last season. He was left out at Leeds in that defeat when they didn't really lay a glove on the home side. So I think it's been obviously noticed by the staff there, as well as the supporters. So hoping that he has a better time of it tomorrow night. And we will see. But yeah, I think it's difficult to predict what Watford are going to be. I think first goal, really important. They've gone behind 11 times, Argyle, and you can't keep expecting them to come back from the dead and take points. So I think if they are to score first, I think they're unbeaten in the games that they have gone ahead in, then it could be another famous night down there. One other thing I wanted to mention, last league game at Plymouth between the two, 1-0 to Watford, Tom Cleverley, the goal scorer, 2009.
Well, maybe he'll bring himself off the bench then. Nice little bit of digging there, Sam. So give me your theory then, Clarkie. How come Watford can be so good at the Vicarage and not too cleverly away from home?
Oh, no idea. I mean, yeah, cleverly. I mean, it is always different. Obviously, it's so hard to explain home and away form. You know, I found it, probably myself as a player, I was much more consistent in home matches than I was on the road, where everything feels a little bit different, looks a little bit different, where expectations change. Yeah, it is bizarre. Yeah, cleverly, we'll be looking to get, you know, find the answers, won't he? Best start to the season for 93 years for Watford at home, but away from home, you know, lower end of the sort of away form table. Yeah, that 6-2 win at Wednesday was the outlier. I mean, they lost pretty tamely at Swansea, Leeds, Luton, Preston, Norwich and Sheffield United before that. So not great at all. I think they won with a back four at Hillsborough and it worked. Will he be bold here and go with a back four and get an extra attacking player on the pitch looking to outscore Plymouth? Or will he go with what is probably the most solid system for them, and that which is three at the back, 3-3-4-2-1. So that's a quandary for him ahead of kickoff. Wanted to mention two players that I think are having very good seasons for Watford. Matty Pollock at the back, son of Jamie Pollock, who was a 90s sort of cult hero, wasn't
Scorer
he?
Scorer of one of the greatest own goals of all time.
Yeah, I mean, he
against QPR.
I mean, he ran around a lot and he was aggressive. He wasn't the best, was he, Jamie Pollock? But he was a proper 90s. Is he a 90s hard man? Could we go as far as to say that?
Just associate him with the own goal rather than
really
being a hard man.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think you'd have wanted to have been in a 50-50 with him, would you?
No, I don't think so. Had fluffy hair, didn't he? But by all accounts, you know, it always looked like it needed a bit of gel on it. But yeah, anyway, his boy Matty's doing great. He's very dominant in the air. He's made 12 more interceptions than anyone else, made 29 more clearances than anyone else at Watford. Maybe because he's, you know, featured so often, but he's often the one that gets the first contact on the ball. So he's someone Plymouth have got to sort of get around. And the other one's Chakvetadze, the Georgian. I mean, he is a really good player. He works hard. You know, when I saw him in the flesh, I was really impressed with his work rate. You know, he'll recover possession more than, he actually statistically recovers possession more than any other Watford player outfield. So he's a team man, but he's also the chief creator. Get this, in open play, he's created 33 chances. No one else has created more than 11. So it's kind of the Chakvetadze show a little bit. They need a bit more from other people like Ebisele, Larucci and others. So yeah, that's a bit of an issue. And the other one is in midfield, not in terms of player, but Kayembe's kind of having to play a little bit deeper at the moment because Sissoko and Deli Bashiru haven't been available lately. Don't know what the score is with them ahead of this game, but they've gone with a, you know, midfield of Kayembe and Loser, Imran Loser, which is perfectly fine, but it's not the first choice midfield for Tom Cleverley. So, yeah, I expect this one to be pretty entertaining, actually. Could be end-to-end stuff.
Just to digress a little bit on the home and away form.
Yeah.
I definitely scored probably 2/3 of my goals at home, I would say. And I was daydreaming the other day, just to widen the conversation, and thought I scored loads of goals in night games, much more than 3 o'clocks. What about you, Clarky? I always felt I could get around more, cover more ground in the night, more air. Obviously, if it wasn't if it was a hot day, a 3 o'clock kickoff, obviously that's going to affect you. I felt a little bit more lethargic. So I'm going to do some digging. So I'm going to have those numbers for you next time and tell you.
What about your own career?
Scientifically, wouldn't that be interesting if, you know, 70% of my goals came in night games or something?
Yeah, 100%.
It might not be that vast, but...
Yeah. I mean, there's not that many to choose from for me. And the non-league records, you know, don't stretch. Not quite as in-depth. I wouldn't know what my record at Stevenage was, but absolutely with night games. I always preferred them. I scored my best goals that I can remember in my career all in night games. The one against Brentford for Southend sticks out, but there's a game against York where I scored twice, two good goals. So yeah, like, I think there's something in that.
And when you're a younger lad, maybe that night sleep is better because you don't have to get up and get into the routine, especially before an away game. You're up early and you're going for a walk and you're having maybe a bit of video in the tactics room. I just think the night game, you're left to your own devices a little bit, aren't you? So maybe you're a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. Some managers, I've got to say, I was one of those players. Some managers would look at me as very much a home player. And you know, when you go away from home and you're going to have to be a bit more defensive, I'd often find myself rubber-dub-dub, which was a little bit frustrating.
What I can tell you, Sam, is that of the 23 league goals you scored in 04-05, only 5 of them came away from home. So there is definitely something.
Very nice.
Home merchant. Theory. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's the championship. What we're going to do now is jolt listeners with an ident and then come back and talk about League One. So Gareth Ainsworth is the new Shrewsbury manager. That was news last week. Now it's simply Gareth Ainsworth is the Shrewsbury manager. His first game as talk of the town is a biggie. Second place, Birmingham City, paying a visit. He's got quite the job on his hands, Adrian, hasn't he? I mean, this is quite a nice first game, though, isn't it? Because no one's expecting them to win it.
Oh, yeah, I agree, actually. And it's probably the kind of first match in charge Ainsworth would relish. He likes being that underdog. He likes to play that character. He likes to wind his players up and really motivate them, doesn't he? So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to guess what he's been talking about all week, how we'll get them going in the dressing room, you know, Moneybags, Birmingham, et cetera, et cetera. I still think they've got no chance of winning. I just, you look at the season as a whole and they can't defend balls that are put into their box and they don't score very many. It's a recipe for disaster and they are heading down. As simple as that, isn't it? I mean, they've lost 6 in a row in all competitions. They're 6 points adrift of safety. 7, really, when you consider how rotten their goal difference is. So it's a real tall order, I think, for Ainsworth to save them. Their record, Shrewsbury, against the top 6 is bad, as you'd imagine. 6 matches against the top 9, lost them all, scored 1, conceded 11. Against the top 15, so I'm stretching it out a bit more generously here, against the top 15, Shrewsbury have taken 1 point from a possible 33. Dreadful. So really, they've got no chance against Birmingham. So yeah, good luck, Gareth.
Yeah, tricky assignment, that's for sure. What about Birmingham, Sam? They have only lost 1 in 17 league games across last season. And this, it seems that they're powering their way out of this division. They have been beaten on the road already this season, but are you minded in the same way as Adrian in that this is going to be a relatively straightforward afternoon for them?
I think they may have to work for it. I completely agree with Adrian. The first thing I thought when I saw, you know, we were going to be talking about this game ahead of the weekend, was this is a perfect game for Gareth Ainsworth. Perfect game for him to try and get his side motivated. And if you think back, they had a very unlikely win QPR at Burnley under
him. That was just what I was thinking about, yeah.
They were really competitive against Leicester, do you remember? And it was his last game. I think Harry Winks scored a worldie late on to win it. So in the big games, sometimes they can find a way and his sides can be really motivated. So we shall see. And Birmingham have been very frustrated in the last three games at Mansfield, at Sutton United, the game that I was at, and probably more than ever this season in that game against Northampton at home, where they only actually had three shots that made its way onto the target. The biggest conundrum right now for Birmingham, and sorry if I'm repeating myself here, but it's getting the balance right in the forward positions. I think Williamson's going to play every game. He's a brilliant footballer from what I've seen. Scored the goal at Sutton United. Stansfield's going to play every week. Keshie Anderson's having a bit of a renaissance this season and performing really well. Alfie May is having to be shunted into a slightly deeper position, and it's not working. May started with 4-4 when he was playing as a number nine, 2-13 appearances for him. Stansfield, 7 goals in 11 games, so he's going to play. He's the talisman. They paid massive money for him, and it's having a knock-on effect because the goals are drying up for their standards. Last 6 games, 8 goals. The previous 6, 15 goals. So there is a little bit of an issue there, how you fit them in, and I understand the predicament that the manager's got, because these are top quality players for the level. But I think at the moment you've got to imagine that it's going to be a different kind of configuration. Yokoyama is a wide player who's come in various games and done pretty well. So I think he's the obvious one. And then you put Williamson or you put Keshie Anderson as the 10. So I think that's the issue at the moment in terms of the personnel. But they're a really good team, very easy on the eye, and they can mix it as well. They're physical. And with Bielik back in there at centre-half, I think the back four and the midfield too pick themselves, just that front line. But like I said, I think they've got different facets to win games. Sutton in that game, when there was a team sat in, go and break us down, they didn't just play side to side. They went forward, they went over the top. They've got real ability in the wide positions, set piece threat. Tough, tough game. But if anyone can provide an upset, it could be old Gareth.
15-2 to win it with our friends at Quinbet at the time of recording are Shrewsbury. So they're expecting an away victory there. Also in League One, Huddersfield against Charlton. I don't know about you, listener, but it just doesn't feel like a very League One fixture to me. Weird starts for both these teams, I'd say. Sometimes underwhelming, sometimes whelming. Where are you at with Huddersfield at the moment, Clarky? Yeah, the owner seems to have calmed down a little bit at least.
Yeah, they're doing all right. They're on a little bit of an unbeaten run in the league, aren't they? I think it's 5. Did lose at Tamworth, of course, in front of the TV cameras in the FA Cup, which was a little bit embarrassing. But no, I think they're steady. They've got a couple of players that sort of stand out. Hillick is fit and available. Hillick's been out. The big defender, he scores goals, doesn't he, from set pieces. He's also very reliable when teams put the ball in the box. And Charlton will raid the box, I'm pretty sure of that. So, yeah, Hillick has had a couple of run-outs in the sort of the minor competitions, and he's ready to make his return. So that will really lift them. And they're already really, really solid, Huddersfield. That's what I'd say about them. Only Birmingham have faced fewer shots. So, you know, they keep teams at arm's length pretty well. Good back three. I really like the midfield. I've spoken about this before. Huddersfield have got loads of great options in central midfield. At the moment, it's Ben Wiles has been superb for them. Herbie Kane, pod favourite. And Kasimu, who's a pretty good player himself. So that's a good unit. They've also got Jonathan Hogg, Anthony Evans as well. You know, lots of really decent options in that position. The issue's up front. Just need a striker to fire. You know they're well coached. You know they'll pressure. You know they're pretty solid. But who's going to put the ball in the old onion bag like Sam Parkin, especially on home turf? Don't know is the answer. Radulovic, Marshall, they're the ones been playing. Haven't really been scoring that many. Rhys Healy's there. Josh Caroma's found himself on the bench lately. So, yeah, they need one or two of those four to fire, and then I think Huddersfield will fly. I think their season will defend on getting a goal scorer. This is going to be a pretty dull game, in my opinion. I don't see it being high scoring. It'd be interesting to know what Sam thinks.
I'm interested in your thoughts on Charlton generally, Sam, as well, because 1-8 in the league for them, but that was against Birmingham. I don't know if I was wrong in expecting more from Nathan Jones, given the struggles that they've had for the last couple of years, but it's been a bit sort of 6 out of 10 so far.
I think we were all expecting more. Mm. I think the last time I saw Clarkey, maybe in the flesh, was at the Valley when they played Rotherham. And you could probably replay what I'm going to say now. Yeah, I don't think anything's changed. I think there's a real dearth of creativity and guile. I think the numbers back that up. 17th for the XG4. Well down on shots on target, 15th touches in the box. Only Exeter scored fewer in the top 14 in the division. They've scored 15 in 14 games. So there's a real dearth of, I think, chances being created. They'll hope that Miles Leeburn will return to form. I think he's played five appearances, a couple of starts, scored in the Football League Trophy. He went with him and Godden, who has done pretty well in a team that aren't creative, to get 6 goals to his name already this season. So he went with a front two last time out, but it's just that getting more from other areas of the pitch, I think, bit more of a goal threat from midfield. He's had a look at the diamond in recent games as well, which we know he's had great success with previously at Luton. But I think there was probably, given how competitive they were towards the end of last season, a little bit of grace given towards Nathan Jones. I think that has run out now at the start of this next cluster of games. I think the supporters are frustrated. They want to see results, and this is a tough, tough game. But cannot disagree with Clarkey at all. I don't think there'll be any goals in this game, probably. It'll be very low scoring. They love a draw at the moment, Charlton, and I think 3 of the last 4 prior to that recent Exeter defeat was a stalemate. So that's probably where the safe money would be. And I think, listen, it's not the time or the place, but there's probably bigger issues still at Charlton Athletic off the pitch. But right now, I think Nathan Jones could do with a victory and could do with going on a bit of a run, because at the moment, this squad probably doesn't measure up to what they've had in recent years, in my opinion.
It's a real Tony Hart at the moment. Nathan Jones loves drawing. 14 of his 30 league games as the Alex boss.
Is that a phrase? Have you just made that up? Or is
I was
that
trying to think of an artist, and I mean, Tony Hart's
there's one famous artist that you can't use anymore, obviously.
Yes, quite.
But you might have done in the past. So
let's move swiftly on before we get ourselves in trouble. There is Monday Night Football in League 2, and I'm calling it, this is a local derby. My Maps app tells me you can do the journey from Gresty Road to Vale Park in 21 minutes with good luck. And a fair wind. It's Port Vale against Crewe Alexandra. Adrian, we were talking about there not being many goals in Huddersfield v Charlton. The last 5 meetings between Vale and Crewe have produced a total of 4 goals. But this ought to be slightly more entertaining/interesting given where they start the league. Vale top, 5 points clear of second Crewe, but Crewe have got a game in hand.
Yeah, it's a big old game, isn't it? Yeah, I see why you've picked these games. You've picked some pretty dour looking contests, you've got to say. Talking of dour, I mean, last time out, Port Vale, maybe this is the result that teams that go up get. You know, they went to Morecambe, ugly game, no one played that well, but won, you know, came away with a 1-0 win, just scrapped it out. That's kind of what you got to do. So, and this will probably be scrappy because it's a bit of a derby, like you say. There'll be a sense of occasion there, obviously, with it being a top of the table clash as well. So yeah, be interested to see what happens. Vale have actually been defending much better away from home. They've struggled to keep shutouts at Vale Park. No clean sheets in 7. You've got to go way back to mid-September for the last time they kept, you know, they kept the opposition out at home. So that'll probably be part of the game plan for Darren Moore. Come on, boys. Let's finally get that elusive clean sheet in front of our own fans. Let's not make this hard for ourselves. I looked at the numbers. In terms of, like, expected goals against, these are ranked 2nd and 3rd. Crewe actually 2nd. Port Vale 3rd. So neither team give a lot of way. Vale's keepers made the second fewest number of saves. You know, so, you know, that they're tough to break down, Port Vale. And actually, up front, they've got some good players, haven't they? With Stockley, Ronan Curtis, who's sort of starting to get a little bit better. Patton, he's been in and out, but is a little bit of a handful. But for me, when I think of Port Vale this season, it's really about set-piece goals. You'll see them on the highlights most weeks. Bang, set-piece goal. I think they've got a lot. Well, I think they've got 9 this season. They've scored the most headed goals in the league. They've had the most headed shots. So Crewe will know what to expect here. They're going to get an aerial bombardment, loads of crosses, loads of set piece threat. And can they handle it? That's the bottom line.
Well, can they handle it, Sam? They haven't conceded more than once in a league game since the end of September. That might suggest that they're so solid, Crewe.
They are. Yeah, I think this is a team whose recent success is built on their defence more than probably what they're doing in an attacking sense. One defeat in 13, crew, and we had a podcast last week titled The Teams We've Been Neglecting or something similar. I think crew definitely should have fallen into that category, so it's good that we're getting a chance to talk about them now. And this is a team that in the middle of August got beat 5-0 at home by Chesterfield, and we probably thought in the aftermath of the playoff defeat last season, which they did incredible to reach, was going to be a season of probably, you know, underachievement or consolidation, whatever way you want to dress it up. So they are going brilliantly. Conceded four in the last seven matches, as Clarkey says. Only Wimbledon have got a better XG against than the two that are coming face to face here at the weekend. So I think another tight game in prospect, and no surprise really. I think with this crew team, they've been the youngest 11 that's been fielded in a division this season, just over 22. Port Vale a lot more experience in their ranks, so there's a nice little bit of a contrast there. And I thought the other interesting thing is just crew not probably as possession heavy as maybe they once were. I think there's a bit of variation about their makeup now, in essence, and I think in that, against the top teams, they're getting success when they don't have to be too reliant on trying to break teams down, and they can be a little bit more counter-attacking. Notts County being a case in point last time out. So 4 points off Walsall and Notts County, who look like they're going to be two teams around the shake-up, would suggest that crew are going to be there again. So fascinating to see how they get on against the team that have been flying up the top in Port Vale.
Should be an interesting one. All right, next today, we're going to do a couple of quick scouting reports. Sam, you were on hand to see Wimbledon fight back against Accrington in midweek, a 2-2 draw, but it's Stanley, generally, who you want to tell us a little bit about, another team we haven't spoken about too much this season.
Yeah, I think only right. We spent enough time on Wimbledon. They were good value for the point. Let me say that first. Wimbledon, absolutely. It was a night where the punters would have been going home, slaughtering the referee, the officials. Despite them getting the point, there was quite a lot of the gamesmanship going on from Stanley in the second half. Maybe missed the second booking as well. The ref, certainly in my eyes, from my position behind one of the goals, he missed the penalty when Billy Crellin, who I'll come on to in the Accrington goal, kind of hauled down Matty Stevens when he looked like he was going to pop one in. Which would have been the first, I think. So it was at 2-0. So yeah, they were definitely good value for the point. Probably the better side across the piece. But I was impressed by Aki. Very game. Very game. Very well structured. Good shape. Play a kind of 3-5-2. Two very willing front men who didn't get a great deal of joy. Both decent experience now in the league, but both out of non-league. And yeah, they gave a really good account of themselves. Your mate Rawson got sent off, Matt, late on in the piece, but he was standout in terms of his leadership, his defensive work, the amount of clearances. Zach Owl, who was at Arsenal once upon a time, on loan from Southampton now. He was really good defensively as well. His distribution was a little bit off in the first half, but he actually grew into the game, and he was actually pivotal in the second Accrington goal in terms of a tackle that he made that started the attack. So I enjoyed their performance, and I wanted to just touch on
Zach Orr. Yeah, he's massive, isn't he? Yeah, I remember seeing him play in the first team friendlies. Yeah, he's a big unit, but maybe not the most mobile. But okay, good to hear he did well.
Yeah, he did okay. The one lad who scored the first Aki goal, Nelson Kumbeni, I wanted to touch on. If you haven't seen it, watch the goal. It's the only place he can really squeeze it in. Left-footed, 25 yards, good pace on the strike, but it's the direction, just guides it towards the top corner. It's a brilliant goal. Could be his first career goal. I started to look this morning, but I got sidetracked, but certainly his first for Aki. And he's out of Norwich and went to Bolton, and he's on loan currently from Bolton, only 22. Defensive midfielder, so not overly involved in the final third or doesn't look particularly creative, but really good ball winning ability. nice and tidy, composure on the ball, played a couple of eye-catching passes in the first half where just put good pace on them, really punched them into his teammates, and could probably see straight away that he's been schooled at a higher level. And then he just scored the most sublime of first goals. So yeah, nice left foot, and someone maybe to keep an eye out for. But yeah, as a unit, I was really impressed with them. And going into the game, I didn't really know what to expect, but yeah, they're going to be competitive again this season. And it's amazing when you consider that surely the budget will be right down towards the tail end of League Two once more, and going to AFC Wimbledon and giving them a real game.
Yeah, they are on a decent little unbeaten run as well, ahead of their game at Bradford on Saturday. Speaking of footballers we struggled to pronounce the other week, Clarky, I called your man Ben Doak. Of course, it's Ben Doak. Tell me what else I need to know about him.
Yeah, he's a Scottish whippet at 19. He's a little firecracker, is Ben Doak. Look, it's a bit of a tap in. Everyone's talking about him at the moment, but I have seen him in the flesh a couple of times, and he had a great international break. He tied Gavardio in knots. Not for the first time, actually. He's had two good games against him in the Nations League. A terrific talent. Obviously, that people are talking about because he belongs to Liverpool. He's 19 on loan at Borough, but he plays in the Mo Salah position. What's different is that I think he goes both ways, like left foot, right foot. I think he is right footed, but he's certainly not afraid to cut inside and cross or shoot with his left, which is a massive asset, especially when you've got feet as quick as his. I love watching wingers. I was a winger myself. He's got tricks. He's got the step overs. He's got the drop of the shoulder. He's got the little chop. He'll mix things up a little bit. He'll go on the inside. He'll go on the outside. I love that about him. He's made 14 chances from ball carries this season, and only Chakvetadze, who I was bigging up earlier on in the show, can boast more from ball carries this season. And when you consider that he's only started 8 games, that's pretty good going from Ben Doak. And I've looked at the numbers for Borough. 9 players have played more minutes than him. So it's only really lately he's been a regular. He's already had the most touches in the opposition box. Defenders back off. When he's running at you, they're a little bit scared. So he can get into the danger zone. You know, most touches in the box, most dribbles completed. And on a per 90 basis, you know, he's creating the most chances in open play ahead of even guys like Finn Azaz, who have been excellent. So yeah, top talent. Won't play much of his career in the Championship, I'd hazard a guess. So let's enjoy him in the EFL while we can. Ben Doak's has potential to be one of the players of the season, I think, in the Championship.
All right, make the most of him then, Borough fans. Right, not too long to go. Let's do some predictions and have a quick tweet of the week before we leave you, though. Now, last week, I absolutely knocked it out of the park. And I don't like to blow my own trumpet, but absolutely phenomenal from me. Got every single one right in terms of the result, but only get 3 points for it, listener. Absolutely criminal, that, which is the same.
Didn't you get one on the nose? I thought you got a goalless draw on the nose.
Oh, you're right, I did. Yeah, so that means that I get 6 points.
5 points.
Hang on. Trying to nick a bonus.
So X to Lincoln. It was 0-0. I said 2-2. Adrian said 1-1. Sam said 1-2. Bristol Rovers Crawley, I got as a 0-0. Sam said it'd be a 1-0. Adrian a 3-1. Colchester Bradford was 1-1. I said 3-3. Sam, you got that one perfect. Adrian, you did not.
Not so good, mate. Not good. So yeah, Sam on 31, me on 21. And Matt, you've closed the gap. You're now on 17. You're back in the game, my friend.
That is pathetic. Oh, well, let's see if I can change it this week. Adrian, tell me what's going to happen in Sheffield Wednesday against Cardiff.
Cardiff can't win away, can they? It just doesn't happen. So I'm going to go with a home win. Comfy. Sheffield Wednesday 2, Cardiff 0.
Sam?
Yeah, I would have had that. I concur. So I'll give Cardiff a goal. 2-1.
I would have had that. So I'm going to say 3-1. How about that? Bolton-Blackpool feels like a big game. Oh, well, it always is, isn't it, for both clubs, but particularly with how the table looks. I'll go first on this one, and I will say this is going to be a Desmond. 2-2 for me. What about you, Sam?
We had Bolton the other day, didn't we? And they got spanked by Stockport. Yeah, a little bit all over the place, aren't they, at the moment? And Blackpool have plateaued somewhat after that fast start under Bruce. 1-0 Bolton.
Adrian?
I was considering the 1-0, I've got to say. So I'll give Blackpool a goal. But I think, you know, they're bottom of the form table across the last 6, Blackpool. So Bolton 2, Blackpool 1.
You get to go first on this one, Sam. It's the battle of the W's in League 2, Wimbledon against Walsall. How does it go down?
Oh, well, I know both the gaffers, don't I? So I'll sit on the fence happily, I think, here. Yeah, maybe another AFC Wimbledon rescue job. 1-1 this time.
Adrian?
Good game in prospect, I think. I'm going to go with... The Dons got out of jail, didn't they, the other day? Maybe they won't be so lucky this time. Wimbledon won Walsall 2.
Ooh, away victory. I'll spice it up a bit and go for a home win, so we've all gone for something different, and I will say that it's going to be a high-scoring affair, 3-2 in favour of AFC Wimbledon. We'll let you know how we get on with those next week. Before we go, let me remind you that our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £50 and 50 free spins. It is for new customers at sign up only. Check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions/sports-up-2-50. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Check out gamcare.org. They are the leading provider for gambling support and run the National Gambling Helpline. All those details are in the show notes for you too. Tweet of the week to finish. So Shrewsbury Town are announcing, we are thrilled to announce Gareth Southgate as our new head coach, exclamation mark. Welcome to hashtag Salop, Gareth, handshake emoji, blue diamond, orange diamond. Che Dunkley has quote tweeted this, good character, and I hope Gareth and his team can get a few wins and get the Salop bouncing again. Prayer emoji, football emoji, orange diamond emoji, blue diamond emoji. I just thought, Sam, it was interesting that a current player would weigh in on a managerial appointment. Is he thinking that he might be going back to Shrewsbury before too long, or wherever Gareth Ainsworth goes next? Is this okay, do you think, protocol wise, to be commenting on this sort of thing? Is it something we should be encouraging?
I think it's very nice. Yeah, he's showing the love, isn't he, for the faithful, the Shrews faithful. Yeah, I don't think he's worked with Gareth before, so it's just word of mouth, isn't it? He's heard he's a top guy. And it's funny because everyone you've seen in the last few weeks has said the same, haven't they? So in terms of someone to play for, and that's concurrent with everything I hear from his players, they love him. So yeah, we shall see how it goes. But yeah, I think Che Dunkley kind of echoing the sentiment across the players that have worked with Gareth.
Yeah, and look, he's in senior pro territory, isn't he, Che Dunkley? I think when you get to a certain age, you've got a right to say whatever you want. And actually, while I'm on the subject, footballers should be able to talk about whatever they want. I mean, you know, why shouldn't they be able to talk about other clubs? Not in the same division. He plays for Chesterfield, doesn't he, Che Dunkley, now? So, you know, it's not a rival per se. And yeah, of course, why, we want to hear more from footballers, I think. But when you get older, you know, I think your opinions maybe become more valid as well. So yeah, just a lack of quality punctuation probably spoiled the tweet. But other than that, it was fine.
Yeah, he does like commenting on games in progress in a very modern way as well. On the 14th of November, during the England game, he simply tweeted, Madueke, 3 stars emoji, smiley face emoji, up and down arrows and a punching fist. So make it that what you will.
Gareth has today brought in his old mate, who was the physical performance coach at Wickham at QPR. That's not a tweet that the lads want to be seeing at any stage. Is it Clarkie, someone coming in to work on the fitness?
And I'd be absolutely gutted. The old heart would have sunk. And I know Sam's a man after, you know, similar
the dumbbells that have been collecting dust in the porter cabin gym at Shrewsbury's training ground are going to be wheeled out for some 9 o'clock sessions prior to training.
Fitness coaches in new roles are also busy, with a capital B, and that's not what you need. Yeah, so yeah, maybe it's what the team needs. I don't know.
Enjoy it, Shrewsbury. Maybe it will help them turn things around. We shall see. Many thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Sam and Adrian too. Back with another show next week. Bye for now.